First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
Welcome to Tunnel Talk, a No Facts, All Feelings wrestling podcast on the Social Suplex Network. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
And what have you guys done today to celebrate the failed experiment that is the American democracy? It's 4th of July.
I went shopping.
It's July 4th. And it's all over for us.
I exchange goods for services, which is the American religion. Therefore, I've done my part.
Good for you. Put that money in the economy. Amazing. I ate hamburgers at my parents' house, so.
There you go. Hey.
Classic 4th of July.
That is classic.
What'd you do, Allie?
I stayed in my house.
I went classic to the 4th of July.
I did go to the, I went to the co-op, and I got some limes, some peaches.
Ooh, so, nice. Like, you went to, like, a communist hotspot? Mm-hmm.
I did. I went to a communist hotspot where tons of people were masking and probably had a lot of armpit hair. And
I don't think that sounds like honoring our country at all.
Did you even see a single American flag at that co-op?
I honestly think I didn't. Wow. I think they would get in trouble if they tried to celebrate America at the co-op, which I know some people will be like, yeah, that's the problem. But I think it's a fun, aspect of going to the co-op, honestly. Like that they're just not patriotic in there. And they couldn't be if they tried because they get so many complaints. So they have to be, you know, what they are. They only can be what they are at the co-op. My favorite place to go. So that's what I did. And that's what I have to say. It's my week to report what's making me happy. It's not the co-op. I guess I kind of did just give the impression that it would be the co-op. But it's actually the season finale of Interview with Dawn.
Wait for it. But it has been the finale, so it can't be anyone's what's making us happy for at least a year after this one.
No, I do have something else, but I couldn't not mention it.
It was really good, yeah.
I just love to urge our listeners that if you haven't watched AMC's Interview with the Vampire, just do it. Just get in there because it is the best show on TV. It just is.
One of our friends,
to tell you.
One of our friends in the Social Suplex Discord posted that they had just watched the finale and was like, a little Hangman Kenny. And I immediately lost my mind thinking about Kenny as Louie. And
my goodness.
Hangman is Lestat and like fucking lost my mind and was laughing so hard. And Don Callis is Armand.
That's amazing because I am like Kenny to me is the Lestat. Although that's so Kenny doesn't really have that raw sexuality.
No, he kind of does a lot to undermine his raw sexuality, I would say. You don't see a lot of Lestat saying like, well, golly gee willikers.
And, oh my god, but I wish I did.
And did you say that the Bucks were collectively Claudia?
No, someone else did, but it was so funny. Yeah. So funny.
Oh my goodness. You'd really have your hands full with those
really would,
with those little young Bucks as your fledglings. No, my thing that's not Interview with the Vampire that's making me happy is that I was cleaning some jewelry the other week. And one of the things that I cleaned was my mother's charm bracelet that she got when she was an exchange student in Pennsylvania in high school. And they had given it to her.
Because your mother's Australian. So she was
my mother's Australian.
Foreigner.
So she had come to America for I'm glad for one year of high school.
I'm glad you specified so it wasn't like Delaware sends exchange students to Pennsylvania.
Delaware's native sons and daughters get shipped out to the furthest reaches of Pennsylvania, right on the Ohio border. They're basically in the wilderness. No, but they've given her this charm bracelet as a gift, and it has like a really sweet little, like, one of the charms, you know, is like to Trisha from, you know, her class. And
wasn't
anyway,
she like prom queen? She was wildly popular. She was.
If you were an Australian exchange student in America in the 60s, I think that that made you pretty popular. Pretty cool. She was, yes. So, but I was like, oh, this is so sweet. I never wear it because I had like, it had, some of the charms were lost. So I was like, maybe I could buy some charms to put on it, some old charms. I'll just hop on eBay and Etsy. And it is now my complete new personality. It's my new passion. I'll show you guys. Look, I don't know how much you can see, but I've bought all kinds. I bought a saw charm. I thought that was fun. I bought a ship. I bought a lute.
Have they all arrived? You got a lute. Wow.
There's more coming. I mean, I'm out of control. I bought one that's it's a little turkey on a spit, and you can you turn the spit.
And you can turn it? Wow, have fun.
I got some stockades for, you know, putting people in. It's kind of fun.
Stockades, like you put people in? Wow, I didn't know they made charms like that.
For punishment. Yeah, well, that's part of the thing that's so interesting is being with what have people over the course of the past 100 years been putting on their charm bracelets. And some of the stuff is absolutely buck wild. I mean, it is wild that the stockade charm didn't seem to be that rare. I have found a couple of them.
Wow.
So it's really, I got a little fish scale. But it's fun to just like search for ones that are kind of weird and also be like, how will I reflect my own interests in these charms? For example, I haven't purchased this one yet, but I found a little articulated charm. That means they move. They have a movement they do. And it's a couple on a park bench and you can move one of them to put their arm around.
Oh,
and I said, that reflects my interest.
I was going to ask if you could get a little AMC's Interview with the Vampire charm for your charm bracelet.
You know, I did look for vampire charms and I didn't find any, but I found like a pretty gothic looking Bible. And for some reason to me, I was like, that says sexy vampires. Yeah. And many will not like to hear it. But
are you gonna get a little microphone for us?
Of course I have to get a little microphone. It has been hard to find a really nice one, but that I'm trying not to pay big bucks for these charms. These are silver charms, so they're not the gold ones are it's crazy how expensive these vintage gold charms are, but the silver ones are pretty affordable. So I'm trying to shop smart.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, part of, like, you don't want to find anything too fast, right? Because, like, part of the hobby is, like, looking for it.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. It's really occupying me. And the other thing about these charms, I will say, is they really take up so little space. As you know, I've been trying to get rid of stuff, but this is such a safe thing to bring into the house. They are smaller than a dime. They take up no space. I could buy millions of them. So that's my new passion. That's what's making me happy.
Wow.
Oh, I should look for some wrestlers or some little like boxers or something. If anyone has any fun charm recommendations, you just let me know what you think I should shop for next.
I'm just picturing a wrestler charm just being like the wrestler emoji, basically. Just we're grappling.
Okay.
I can really hear some fireworks in somebody's background.
Oh, it's me. My neighborhood is going apeshit.
Nice.
Hopefully the listeners won't hear it now that I have my fun, you know, filter setting on. But I would say the neighbors are quite celebrating the birth of our country, I would say. And have been since about 9 a.m., I would say.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Well, it couldn't be me, but I'm just glad everyone's having fun. We watched Forbidden Door this past weekend. I thought before we get into the storyline stuff, we could just quick check in. How did everybody feel about the pay-per-view?
I had a very pleasant time. I actually didn't think that I was going to be able to watch the pay-per-view. And then I got both rained out and my friends got COVID, and so I ended up being home for the pay-per-view after all. And I had such a nice time that, like, I wasn't even, like, that sad that I, like, was missing my plans. But then, like, I also was like, but it wasn't the best Forbidden Door. So it's, like, very complicated to me. Like, they put on a great show, but really there was only, like, one or two memorable matches. But, like, it was good. Like, you know, certainly they got, like, I don't wish that I didn't watch it.
Yeah, it's very, like, Forbidden Door is never, like, my favorite one just because it's not very story-heavy because of all the crossover action. But it always, like, over-delivers. And AEW pay-per-views in general almost always over-deliver. And this one just delivered, which was fine. There were, like, three matches I was really into, and then the rest of them were perfectly – like, because all the bad attitude gang of FTR and, you know, House of Black and those guys were not on, like, the main card, it was, like, there weren't any matches I was mad about. So that was nice.
No. There was, like, barely a bathroom break match.
Yeah.
I believe famously on Twitter.com, everybody was like, it was Jericho's match. Yeah. And then I was mad at them. I was mad at a tweet that was like, oh, people were flooding out of their seats during the Learning Tree match. Goes to show. And I was like, goes to show that on purpose, it was supposed to be the bathroom break match. I don't know what to tell you. There has to be
there
one.
There has to be
sure.
one.
Yeah. I and it was right Tony in the middle. That. I know they think about it when they're doing the show. There has to be a match that they're like, yes, people won't really want to see it. And it's good if it stars someone who still is, you know, a big deal. People just aren't in the mood to see
it. I have the last few pay-per-views. I feel like I've been managing my time badly. Because, like, at 10, the dog has been being very strict with me lately, where she starts staring at me until I take her out and we go upstairs and start bedtime routine. And then I've been taking my bedtime medication such that I can fall asleep right after the pay-per-view. But that kind of means, like, from 10 to midnight, I'm a little in and out mentally and physically, let's say. I was like,
this is how Anne Soft launches. She's like, I've actually just been going to sleep. I don't even see the last 2 hours.
I'm technically awake, but in terms of how much of the Mox Naito match I remember, let's just say it was very little.
I had also decided to view the pay-per-view from bed, which this is business. So usually I'm in my living room, but for some reason I thought, let's put on the bedroom TV. And I was such a sleepy girl.
I was also in bed. I would say I was also in bed. It was a Sunday night. It was a school night.
I'm just imagining us as the grandparents in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And so it's all three of us in one bed, just watching the pay-per-view TV and occasionally nodding off and letting out a little. Does he still have the belt?
The last time was even worse, though, because it went till 12:30, and I was like, woo! Eyes technically open, but I'd taken a little edible earlier in the evening, and it really hit at a certain point before I was prepared for it, too.
Amen, sister.
Have you guys ever fallen asleep during a pay-per-view? Like, actually passed out?
No.
I fell asleep when Kenny won it off of Mox. I fell asleep during that match.
Oh, wow.
It was before the podcast, so I didn't have to own up to it. But I did the next morning.
You never told us that.
I did not have to own up for it. Next morning, I had to be like, did John Moxley lose belt?
That's so funny because in this moment, I cannot believe that we were watching TV when wrestling TV. When Kenny won the big belt off of Mox. Yeah. And in fact, I'm kind of like, wow, that happened?
I believe that was also...
No, you're right. You're
if
right.
I'm wrong, people are going to make fun of me. But I think that was also the pay-per-view that Christian debuted. Because my friend Nan was like, text me and tell me who the big debut is. And I was like, I will. And then I was like, oh, it's Ethan Page. And she was like, who? And I was like, I don't know. He just came out. I think he's a guy. And then later I had to be like, oh, that wasn't the debut. That was a debut. The debut was a man named Christian. She was like, Christian of Christian and Edge. And I was like, I don't know who that is, Nan.
I don't know.
To me, Ethan Page and Christian Cage are equally new and equally large names. I don't know what to tell you.
They look the same. What do you want from me? I didn't know. one was more important than the other.
And honestly, it's like, we do still bring that value to our podcast of like, all names are the same to us, but not as much as they used to be. No. It's unfortunate that we are not those casual fans that we once were.
We lost our innocence. Now we recognize Gabe Kidd and we know Chad Gable.
So sick.
It's a nightmare that we found Discord and it like worked for us because like when we only had Twitter, we would come in and out and learn just enough to get by. But Discord forcibly socializes us. We just have all these like things in our head. Like, I don't know.
All these facts. I know. All these things we know.
I know. It's like, I know Ricochet is coming someday. And, yeah. Like, I know enough to know like how to feel about that. Like, what are we doing here?
We used to be so uneducated so and it was stupid. So beautiful. It I was know. So, yeah. We were just in the
dumbest babies.
You we were getting really pure were opinions, uninformed by any information or anyone else's opinions. They were just purely based on the on-screen product, which I think is beautiful.
Yeah, and I just think that the Young Bucks were so smart to have heel outfits when they turned heel. Just a gear change. That's so innovative.
So simple, but so innovative. You know what? But I want you guys to know, the listeners, that we try every day to remain as ignorant as possible about wrestling just for you. Okay. So it's like, yes, we are being educated, unfortunately, but like we do resist it. We resist it. And we try to still bring those same untainted thoughts and ideas to this program. And
our listeners are constantly being like, let me tell you about this. Let me tell you about this man. Let me tell you this history. And we're like, please don't. I'm just kidding. I love everything I'm told. There was somebody that emailed us and told me the whole story of like the Stardom match that Chris and Willow were in. And I was like, ooh, I could like a little like sexual cliff notes of it. Of some of these matches.
I mean, love anyone cliff notes. Yeah, should feel free to send us sexual cliff notes at any time.
Thank you, Eric Sunderland.
Yeah.
Slenderman?
I think it was probably Eric Slenderman. Yes. Probably that's right. We simply must discuss the wrestling. So it's time to stop whatever's happening here. Osprey and Swerve had their big main event match at Forbidden Door. They fucking crushed it. This match was so fucking fun.
Yeah.
I have said here is that the kind of the layout of the match was they kind of took each other's measure and then they grappled for dominance. And there was a little, you know, we had a little bit of the Tiger Driver 91 storyline. Osprey was going to do it, but then he couldn't. We had some shenanigans. Don Callis came out with a screwdriver. He was trying to get Osprey to cheat. Osprey kind of flirted with it, but then didn't. He had a lot of kickouts. He had a technical pin, but the ref was knocked out. You know, all that kind of stuff. Swerve won the match. Afterwards, and I will say live on the air that this didn't even come up on the Cateside Seats recap. This is so this whole
disgusting sport
that we love. The viewers are so sick in the head. They don't even pay attention to what's important, which is that Swerve, you know, kind of celebrated with the crowd, and then he crouched down in front of Osprey and he put his hand on Osprey's neck and he whispered soft words of encouragement to him, like as if to say, like, you will be a big boy someday, but just not yet. Like, it's not your time yet. And then he kind of grabbed him by the, give him a little hair ruffle, and he kissed him on his head.
Very Lestat Louis, am I right? Whispering things we can't hear.
So true, King. Oh, my God.
It was so tender, and it was so kind, and it was in such contrast to how fucking brutal the match was. That was absolutely killing me. The fact that Swerve, I feel like the dynamics of the match was that Swerve was a wolf and Osprey was a little golden retriever, and Swerve was like brutalizing him at times, and then the match ended and he was like you did such a great job, you'll be back here again someday, it'll be your time, I believe in you. And it was just really nice.
Yeah, so much better than like a respect match where they just like shake each other's hands coldly. Yeah. Like, I want to see a man cradling another man. I want to see a little kissy on the forehead.
Yes,
absolutely. I thought it was so, like, it was such a great, rich moment for the characters as well, where it's like, you know, that they've known each other for a long time. They didn't actually even, I mean, obviously that came up throughout this, but they could have like gotten into it more and they chose not to. They've known each other for a long time. And it was such a, for me, great, like new element to Swerve's character, where it did make him seem like he has like grown and learned from things that have happened to him over the past couple of years, where he could be like, he was so brutally protective of the belt in that segment before the match and in the match itself, where he's like, I will do anything to win this, but that he was able afterwards to be like, okay, I won it. And I can set that aside and say like, it's not about you. It's just about like, this has to stay mine. And I still believe in you. Yeah. I thought it was great.
And it's such a move of confidence too. Like, it felt like Swerve's like, he's really the champion. He's not feeling insecure at all. Like, he can give that to Ospreay too.
Yeah. Absolutely. That was
really sexy stuff to me. Or me. Yeah.
This match itself was so good. Like, I was really pleased when Meltzer was saying it's the best, I forget what category, but like the best pay-per-view main event or something like that. But it was like, often, like, I feel like Ospreay is not quite to my taste. Like, obviously, he's a really good wrestler, but other people go feral for his matches, like, more than I do. But this one really got me. Like, I felt really edge of my seat and just, like, all the near falls and the whole ending. I was just like, this is incredible.
And I thought there was, I know I'll sound stupid when I say it, but I thought there was some interesting psychology at play. Like, I was definitely interested in the fact that they could have gone really hard right out the gate. And I think we've seen that from Ospreay quite a bit, that he's like, yeah, I'm absolutely crazy. So I'm the aerial assassin. So I'm going to immediately begin by, you know, just doing some aerial assassination. But they were really like, they were going like slower than I thought they would. They were like feeling each other out. They worked up to it. Like, it was just like, it really, you know, kind of got me as someone who is not good always, don't be mean to me, at understanding the actual wrestling. And I really try. And when I enjoy it, I love to enjoy it. But I just, it doesn't come as naturally to me to understand like, oh, of course, this is what this move meant. But they really communicated to me like that we are taking each other seriously in this certain way. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So good work. Is there anything else you guys want to get into about Swerve and Ospreay? We did have some thoughts from, Swerve was on the scrum and he said a little bit about how he thinks about building feuds and like building his character that I think we all just like popped like crazy
for. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I felt so intense about it where I was like, yes, yes, yes. You know what I mean? Like when he was saying, I never worked in with Hangman in my career, never really known him too much, but we got to the point of like, what's in our hearts? What are we fighting for? What means something to you? Hello? Hello? Yeah.
What do you love? What do you fear? He said, I think about it all the time. It's like everything I've ever wanted to hear a wrestler say.
Oh. I know. Whenever he talks about like how he thinks about stories and how he thinks about characters, it's like, you are the only one doing it. And it's, and it really shows too. And I feel like earlier this year, his character was like a little shakier, but now it feels like he's really like kicked into gear and like found like a really good, just, he's telling great stories with everybody he's working with.
And it was interesting to me that he made it clear that Ospreay feels that way as well, which I thought was very, like, encouraging. And also, like, I think it came out this morning that that Ospreay really wanted this match because he wanted to do it early to remove people thinking that he was going to get the belt at All In. And people were framing it as, like, a charity thing, like, oh, he doesn't want to do that to Ospreay. And I'm like, I don't think Ospreay wants to do it to himself. Like, if he feels the same way that Swerve does, which Swerve seems to indicate he does, then it makes sense that he's like, I can't win the belt yet. I don't deserve it yet. My character doesn't deserve it yet. It would fuck my character up.
And Ospreay's doing such solid work telling a story right now of the like cocky guy who's like just happily gonna thinks he's gonna, you know, come in here and get everything, and then he's getting crushed, and he's playing the crushed like so well. It's really effective.
Right? I was gonna say, I felt like we'd heard before Ospreay came to AEW full time, I felt like he'd heard that he had never seemed that interested in storytelling or hadn't told very interesting stories. But I will say that everything that he's done since showing up, like it's wrestling. So with almost everyone, there are moments where you're like, that doesn't quite add up. But like, his attention to I want this to be an emotional beat has mm-hmm. been very consistent. And yeah. I've been really happy with it. I don't know, like, I don't know exactly what arc he's imagining for himself. I don't know exactly, like, what beats he's going to be trying to hit in future. But I, every week, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm tracking that stuff is happening in your interior life that's impacting mm-hmm. the choices that you make, which is really pleasant and kind of all I asked at a basic level, all I asked.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I loved Swerve's whole thing and everything he said. And I hope he's really spreading that good word. Yeah. I hope people are paying attention and saying, wow, that guy knows what's up.
That's how you go to the top of the card, kids. Look into it.
When he was saying that, I was thinking, if there's any truth to the person who holds the belt as the class president, I really hope so. Because I'm like, I really hope that, like, backstage people are being like, I want to be like Swerve. Maybe I should know what I fear. Maybe I should know what I desire. Yeah.
I mean, they really should. It's like Swerve, more than anybody, has, like, taken advantage of every opportunity given to him, which was not that many. He, like, made this happen for himself. He lost a bunch, but he always, like, stood out. I mean, it's just a good model for any of those whiners complaining that Tony's not pushing them enough. It's like, well, make it happen. Take advantage of what you are given.
And you know what? You know what else Swerve is a model for? He came to the scrum without a shirt on. Just saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say he's just a model for looking like a fucking stone cold fucking hunk. Like, just looking so fucking hot every time I see him.
Not afraid to show it to me, which, you know, not to subtweet. But some people,
you and Anne have both done some subtweeting to some people we like and some we don't. So I guess we'll simply leave it to the listeners to figure out who you can be talking about. We do have this little grace note, which is that on Dynamite. So I'm going to move this into the next section. So I'll set it up and then we'll get into it. So Ospreay has another storyline cooking right now, which kind of played out. He had this Dynamite main event set up with Danny Garcia for this week. We had a segment with MJF and Danny at the beginning of the show where MJF asked to be in Danny's corner for the match, which is crazy, totally insane. And I will say for myself, I'm not sure I have tracked the MJF Danny Garcia thing as closely as I should have, but it's fine. Anyway, so we have this match with Ospreay and Danny. MJF's on the sidelines. He's very invested in the outcome of the match. He offers Danny his Dynamite diamond ring at one point to be like, just cheat and win. Danny is tempted. He's kind of holding the ring. It's, you know, it's the whole deal. He hands it back. He immediately loses the match because he was distracted by evil, which is, there's a lesson there for us all, you know? And MJF, so Ospreay comforts Danny.
So much comforting post-match. Danny was full on crying too, which made me very emotional.
Yes.
Yeah.
Both of them were making me really emotional because they were being so like open and emotionally honest. Like the fact that in that promo, like last week, when Danny was like losing my last title shot was the most humiliating thing that's ever happened to me. And it felt like those feelings were coming back in this moment where he was crying, not just because he lost here, but like all the pent up feelings from last time too. And he was just like doing such a good job with like these like angry racking sobs where it was just like, I don't want this to be happening, but I don't know how to stop it either. And Ospreay kneeling down and touching his shoulder and having this vibe of like, I've been here. You know what I mean? What's the West Wing thing? I know I've been in this hole and I know the way out, you know?
Yeah. Well, it was extremely effective and emotionally affecting to have Swerve on Sunday kneeling in front of Ospreay and being like, you did your best. You know, I mean, we don't know what he said, but you did your best. That's all you can do. And you shouldn't be ashamed and you shouldn't be upset. And then to have on Wednesday, Ospreay doing that same thing to Danny, I literally got so emotional and was just like, men need to see this. Like, this is the antidote to toxic masculinity. Like, men need to receive like tenderness, like, and kindness, and then be like, you know what? I'm going to pass that on to somebody else. So Haley Joel Osment, whatever that movie was, pass it on. dinner. Something I
pay
gave
it
you.
Forward. Something I gave you.
I'm classic 90s film. There's something I gave.
There's something I gave Mary.
That sounds not right. Okay. I thought I was really genuinely moved, and yeah. I thought this is a good use of media time. I mean, it's like I'm really, it's also like really like cool and sexy, but like I don't know.
Yeah.
Really nice.
Get the message out to men at the thing that they watch, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Get into their sports.
Especially because Osprey is so, like, he's so many got, like, people's, like, so many men's, like, athletic god, you know, like the special little guy of, like, people who, like, only care about, like, wrestling is real, you know what I mean? So to have that moment where you're like, oh no, like he is in touch with his emotions, he feels strongly and he's not afraid to show it. I was like, yes, people need to be seeing this.
It's just really nice. So he then leaves. MJF enters the ring. He also comforts Danny Garcia with some like kind of callback vibes to him and Adam Cole. And then he pulls him to his feet, like, you know, presumably to be like, everybody give him a round of applause, and knees him in the groin. And then violently attacks him for many minutes. We were well over the, you know, the kind of the end time of the episode. We're starting to creep into that second quarter. It makes you nervous. So he beats him up till he's bleeding. He's drooling. Truly, he really did the job of his life, Danny Garcia did. Just looking like, oh my God, that's a child.
That drool was crazy. Like, that was a nice little touch from him.
Yeah, it was a lot. We had Daddy Magic ran out and got beat up trying to help. We had Vice Principal Christopher Daniels come out. And, like, can we just pause on that? Christopher Daniels in the ring with security, like, getting MJF off of Danny Garcia. And Christopher Daniels is just shouting, why would you do this? And I was like, okay, well, are you the vice principal or are you his dad? Because if you're his dad, you can yell, why would you do this? But if you're the vice principal, you need to be yelling, like, we're taking this to my office. Like, why would you do that? That's not the issue yet.
Well, like, even if you're his dad, is that the moment for it? Like, pull him off him first. And then I would have a talk about why he did this.
But it's true. I would understand the kind of the emotion, the energy. If it was his father, if it's the vice principal, it's like his only concern should be getting these men off each other and taking one of them to a private space.
The reason why it felt so parental is because I've seen so many parents in this moment be like, why are you the G? Why are you the devil? Why have you been put on this earth to target me? Why did you do this? Why did you take a jar of jelly out of the fridge and paint a wall with it? Like, you know, like, it's like, it's not that you did evil. It's that you did absurd evil. You know what I mean? Like, that was his tone, where he was like,
it's true that,
why?
Chris, his energy was like, I am the parent of Dynamite. Why did you do this to Dynamite? On my TV.
I'm so
a wrestler beating up another wrestler? Why would this happen?
I'm so bummed that people seem to hate Vice Principal Daniels, because I think he's so funny.
And
I think the role he plays in the ecosystem is funny.
I think it's, you know what, I kind of see it both ways, because I'm like, I love talking about Vice Principal Christopher Daniels, and I do think that he's been really funny, but also he is now embroiled in kind of like a bigger issue of like, what is the storyline with like the people in charge? Like, what is that headed somewhere? Like, is he going to have this role forever? Or is it like, I kind of can see the feeling of like, what are you doing here? But at the same time, every time I'm watching him, I'm having a blast. So he's kind of perfect for me.
I feel like the issues with the larger storyline are not really at the feet of Christopher Daniels in this, you know, in this setup.
He's
so
just doing his best. He's just a vice principal. He doesn't make a good salary. Okay.
No.
He's making a pittance. He does his best. All he tries does to keep everyone in uniform.
It's break up fights and call people's parents.
Girl. It happens like 50 times a night. So this was an especially bad beating. It is true. So then MJF was kind of storming out of the building. He was getting into it with people in the crowd. Like, there was a whole, it was a very violent, bad energy in a good way. Because you're like, well, yeah, he's a heel. And he clearly did everything he could possibly do to be like, you cannot cheer this.
Yeah.
Like, it just was such uncheerable heel behavior.
Yeah.
And I think credit to him for that, for sure. That it's just like, you had to heel turn for real. You couldn't be doing smug heel anymore. Yeah. And you did. And it was really, you know, it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like he had to go hard because people have been, they want to cheer him. So it's like, you gotta really lean into it. And like, thank God he's a heel now, because him as a babyface just does not work.
Yeah.
If you're not, I think we've said it many times before, but like, to me, for someone to be a face, like, there just has to be some vulnerability. It can be, like, with some people, it's a very light degree of vulnerability. Yeah. But there's lots of people who, like, don't really work as faces for me because they don't want to do any vulnerability. So, but he wasn't doing any. So it's like, you can't be a face then.
Yeah.
You have to be that. Sarah made this point, I think, on one of the more recent Trish and Sarah's, I believe, that, like, MJF has talked about how, like, when he, you know, he studied all the best heels, and he spent a lot of time watching tape of how heels are and how they act, and he had a strong idea of who he was as a heel, but then he got forcibly face turned kind of against his will, and he's never done that kind of research on how to be a face, and he has no idea what he's doing, and he's kind of like, he was kind of feeling it out to see if he could figure it out. It's like, well, he didn't, so that's okay.
I know. In the last few weeks since he's been back, it's like, I guess he's technically a babyface, but he's being such a smarmy dick. Like, this isn't, so it's like, good we didn't keep that going for too long.
Yeah. It's very funny that I think you're right about what you were seeing, but I didn't even think of, I was just like, man, he's just a heel, I think. Much. I mean, I just really didn't engage with it because I was like, well, he's so mean and he's not nice, so he's a heel. Okay, and then we should just briefly touch on the fact that we also, so Ospreay came back out, Danny Garcia is getting stretchered away, Ospreay is looking like really upset, and Christopher Daniels is basically being like, this is a teacher issue, okay, so students need to go to their next class, and this is a teacher issue now, and he was being like, that's my friend, like, why is there an ambulance here?
I didn't even think of that, but that was exactly his vibe. He's like, we've got it, buddy.
He's like, go back to English class. Go back to your class.
He's like, I did first aid training so I could be a lifeguard last summer. Like, I could help. Christopher Daniels is like, it's a liability issue, okay?
You need to go back to English. You need to go back to class.
And it's so funny, particularly because it took so long for Ospreay to come out. Like, Daniel Garcia was like fully beat into an inch of his life before Ospreay stumbled out to be like, is something going wrong? Is something happening?
It's like, security's already here. Where were you 10 full minutes ago?
Well, it's kind of funny because I'm like, Ospreay almost like, almost had the best excuse because he had just come off a match. So I'm like, well, he might have, could have hopped in the shower.
Probably could have been, a nice could have been in a corner,
just kind of coming down. Like, there's lots of things that he could be doing, just being like, and I have no other responsibilities on the show. No worries. There, it's everybody else in Gorilla. It's like, nobody.
I do like it very much when, like, clearly they don't have, like, any sort of, like, specific person that they want to come do a save. So instead they just do like a generic, like, who's ever a face right now and is not doing anything Orange, else kind
brought,
of runs
brought,
out.
It's okay. Yeah. I brought Griff.
That's right. That was so funny.
Dustin, the only man who's ever hung a lamp on that, a lampshade on that. And he sure did.
Funniest man alive. Wow.
So funny. Okay, but we did also have an Ospreay, this was before this, I think, but we had an Ospreay Don Callis Kyle Fletcher segment where Ospreay was like, look, Don Callis, I'm not a killer you want me to be anymore, and don't yell at me, please be nice to me, I'm feeling really fragile, can you please let me out of my killer contract that I have with you. And Don Callis, you would expect to be really mad. But instead, he said, you know, I just want you to be happy. I care about you so much. I'm a good guy. I'll let you out of your contract as a favor. And maybe someday she'll do a favor for me. And that's kind of, that's the kind of line setup that I'm like, if you don't pay this off for me, which sometimes wrestling doesn't, but this I'm pretty sure they will. If you don't pay this off for me, I'm going to flip out. That's so good.
Yeah.
And they hugged, and then Don said, come along, Kyle Fletcher, come with me. And Kyle looks so stressed. But then he said, okay, I'll just go with my daddy, Don. It's not what I like.
And he and Osprey made such significant eye contact. It was very like Fox and the Hound, where it was
absolutely.
You're just going to leave Osprey on the side of the road and I have to come back with you in the car?
That can't be right. He's my friend. And Don is like, I'm sorry, only hounds can live at the farm. Foxes don't live at the farm. Kyle and Osprey have had some very sweet moments. I guess there was the collision promo where Osprey ask Don Callis's permission to ask?
What
happened?
So Don Callis was like, oh, Osprey, so you have this match, and like obviously like we'll help you cheat. Like, of course we'll help you cheat. Yeah. And like, and Osprey was like, no, like I don't need that. Thanks for the offer. But Kyle, would you come have my back at the weigh-in? And like it was a very funny moment where Kyle was like, me? You want me? Well, yeah, of course.
I'm not doing anything else. Your best friend. Who else was he gonna ask? Greg? He's never been to a sleepover with Greg. I don't think he's going to have him come second him.
Greg is having the funniest experience because it's like Greg broke up his family and joined the Don Callis family just as the Don Callis family started to fracture. And he clearly is like, Don, I didn't join this just so like this could be happening. And Don is like, stop paying attention. Just stop listening. Stop looking. You're a robot. Shut up.
Looking. That is the Don Callis. That's his like his little motto. Just stop listening. Stop looking.
His face, Greg's face in every promo is like, I really backed the losing horse. Like,
it's like, what the hell? You're letting people just leave now? Great.
It is very funny to think about Greg being like, it's okay that I'm leaving my family that sucks because I'll be in this new family that'll do all the normal things families do, like have a movie night with popcorn and go out for dinner. And sometimes we'll go on a trip to Six Flags together. Every week he's just like, I don't understand. There's been no trip to Six Flags. There have been no movie nights. Do you guys hang out? Like, I actually really crave that closeness.
I would kill for a skit backstage where like Greg is like trying to join the learning tree. He's like, I listen.
This he just is sidles what I was up told. To he sidles up to Big Bill like, do you guys do movie nights? No. They probably do. Yeah. They're educational films, but they're
watching like the NXIVM documentary for tips. Oh my gosh. Okay. We also did get a little, Kyle Fletcher did give Osprey a little shoulder kiss. He's so sweet. Yeah. I mean,
and he tenderness. Really had to work to do it too because they were in motion. So he really had to like stretch his little face to the shoulder. I saw that some people were very upset about that on the old internet, but
that's fucking why they need to see it, man.
I know.
They shamed Kyle?
They shamed Kyle? Wow. For kissing a little fox?
A little kiss between the homies?
Kiss between the homies. All these. So much toxic masculinity to get dragged out of people by watching people kiss their homies.
Yeah, you got to see it and you got to learn to love it. It's sweet. It's nice. Okay. All right. Mercedes Moné fought Stephanie Vaquer at Forbidden Door and won. So she now, Vaquer?
Vaquer.
Okay, I was right.
Yeah.
She now has two titles. I don't remember the match very well. The previous stuff we've said about watching from bed. After the match, she's celebrating. She's holding the belts aloft. Britt Baker comes out, stares her down. We have not seen this woman in almost a year. Yeah. Stare down. She leaves. Any thoughts on the Forbidden Door, on the match itself, and on Britt's reappearance?
It was a good match, and Stephanie is very attractive, and liked very watching beautiful. Them do things.
I like her whole aesthetic, too. It was very, whole goth thing.
It is going to be a bummer if she goes to WWE, but I mean, but if she gets way, that back, kind of, good for her.
Good for her, yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, you leverage what you can leverage, pretty yeah. much.
I mean, good luck. Best of luck.
Sarah's always like, in a healthy economy, it is like fairly normal for people to like have yeah. two different places they could go to. And it's like, yeah, I would like her to go to my school so I could like look at her yeah. more, but every, sure.
Right. Every week in wrestling, we have to relitigate whether or not monopolies are bad. And the community just cannot decide.
I always think it's so funny too when the fans are like more tribalistic than the wrestlers, you know?
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
Like, it's as though the wrestlers think this is a company that employs them and doesn't like say, yeah. own them, you know, that they don't necessarily owe loyalty to.
They haven't made their employer their identity somehow. So
interesting.
When you put it in that, when you try to translate, like, whatever, we can't get into it. Anyway, very funny. Okay. Thoughts on seeing...
Oh, I was just going to say, also, it was interesting that the crowd really did turn on Mercedes during the match, which I think Trish and Sarah said was partly because, like, the fans in the crowd were being annoying.
Yeah,
but,
I think they and someone else we know, Josh, was saying that like there was a bunch of really annoying Mercedes fans that were being really obnoxious. So then like the crowd specifically turned on those fans and did so by like turning on Mercedes, which is very funny. And
especially
as, like,
when they were like, fuck the Celtics yeah, and stuff.
Yeah. It's like as a Boston resident, it was really funny. Like I was like half tuned out. Like I was watching it but not listening to commentary, and it was just like zoomed out, and all of a sudden I heard like fuck the Red Sox, and I was like, what's happening right now?
What'd you guys think about Britt having a little half second at the Pape?
Oh, I was so
she
excited.
She looks good. Her abs are crazy.
It's absolutely an insane situation.
I have made the bold choice to not read a single other person on internet.com's opinion of Britt Baker. And by doing this, so I have kept mental health and wellness. Mm-hmm. And I'm just really happy to see her because I missed her and she looks great. Yeah. And I love her a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And Mercedes Britt. I mean, that's a good combo for a big match.
Well, so that started to play out on Dynamite a little more. Britt had a full-length in-ring promo in which she got to kind of, like, address why she's been gone and talk about how, you know, her hopes for the future being head of the division again. Which this promo got interrupted by Mercedes, who was also scheduled to have a belt celebration. So there's a little bit of a vibe of like they both reserved the room. Like it was like, well, you can't practice here anymore. It's my turn. So she rolled in with her celebration and they had a little face off. A little
which
back
was
forth.
Funny with Britt standing there while people like brought balloons into the ring and stuff. And Britt being like, what the hell? This is my conference room. Like I have it till 9.
Yeah. She was like, I won't be leaving. I'm on a call. So
with a client. So yeah.
I think that takes precedence over your internal celebration. Oh, you met your sales quota? Okay. I'm on a call with a client. Yeah, so Britt said she basically challenged Mercedes for All In. And Mercedes said, get in line. I have two belts, so actually get in line because everybody wants them. And then Britt said, what line? Which I thought was quite funny, actually.
Yeah, I thought it was a great line. I really liked it. It made me laugh because also it like made Mercedes pop a little bit. Like I could just see it in her eyes where she's like, that fucking hit.
Yeah. And Mercedes kind of left it on an, you know, uncertain note. She just said whatever her catchphrase is about, like, must be the money. I need my money.
Well, that was the only, I would say, sour note is that I was really, really enjoying it. And Britt set the line. She said, what line? And Mercedes went, oh, well, Britt, as you know, money changes everything. And it was like...
So you're gonna pay people to get in line?
I was like, that was the one moment where I was like, Mercedes, that didn't make no sense.
It was I feel really fond of Mercedes.
I know.
And I do, like sometimes I'm just like, you are addicted to catchphrases. And I know that can be so fun, but you just want to sit down and be like, but they don't always work. It can't be, we can't over rely on them, but it's like in such a loving, friendly way. I thought she did really well, honestly. I thought she held her, like their energy was meeting in the right place.
Do you remember season 6 of Buffy where, like, the whole, like, first half of this season was, like, just Buffy bot? And, and the very beginning, you were like, this is so stupid. But then, like, because we're crazy, like, you start humanizing the bot and being like, no, I love Buffy bot. And then when Buffy bot dies, you're, like, genuinely crushed. And so that's how I feel about Mercedes, where I'm like, I love Mercedes bot. I'd die for her. No, she makes no fucking sense, and I love her.
If Mercedes came out there and said, that'll put marzipan in your pie plate, that would really take it over the top for me. Oh my God.
Anyway,
yeah, I feel like people were telling me that Mercedes, like, is a big wrestling dork and she should lean into that more. And she hasn't leaned into that, but I do feel like the catchphrase, it's like her being a big dork with the catchphrases is, like, making me like her more. So
it is. It's honestly, it's working. It's just like, yeah.
It's like, especially, like, because she just doesn't, like, she's like, I'm rich. And I'm like, you don't even, like, I know that you genuinely are rich because you've been, like, a well, like, paid person at WWE for years and years and years. But somehow you give off the impression that you're like, a very poor person who's putting on, like, a rich persona. And that's even funnier to me. The whole thing is just so funny.
And it's like, she is the CEO, and sometimes I think comedy things to myself, like, she's never once told us why she wants to be a CEO. She's never once explained what she's afraid of, maybe not being CEO anymore.
I did think the only, like, I thought Britt did a great job, but I think the part where she was like, and of course, Mercedes has a three initial catchphrase like mine, but she taught it to everybody via a theme song, and I was like, okay, well, Britt, like, I don't know that you
was
have...
like, I went to school for mine. It's like, okay, are we having a dork off in the ring right now?
It's like, oh, would you respect her more if she went to Harvard Business School to become
HBS,
CEO?
Still three initials. Yeah, I think, you know, I think they're going to be good. I think they're going to be good. I liked their energies.
Yeah, you got to give them this. It's going to be entertaining.
It's going to be entertaining. And it's kind of like, they both have, you know, a little bit of diva energy. So it's like, just lean into it, girls. That's fine. You do anything you want. I just can't wait to see it. I'm glad that...
I mean, they really convinced me that they are deeply irritated with each other. Like, and the whole, like, ring scheduled at the same time. Like, I would like more petty irritations like that in my feuds. So,
oh, absolutely.
I know. Well, that's why the best feud that Punk did was with Eddie, because it just came from being pissed that Eddie interrupted his promo, which was legitimately a good way to be like, you walked into my shot.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Credit where it's due. How it's so interesting. We've gotten through so few topics.
Yeah. Oh God.
We seem scrolling to be barely ahead. Progressing.
Oh no.
Well, you guys just do we have a little podcast, like, safe word, like, to be like, stop, no more podcasting? Do you want one? Should we have one? It's kind of, it could be like alligator.
Yeah, for see you later, alligator. Like, done with the topic, and we've got to, like, work it in so it sounds natural to
the
audience.
Oh my God, that'll be so funny if, like, all of a sudden you just hear us be like, yeah, and it's just like, you know, like, they were like, they were giving that promo, but they sounded like two alligators snapping at each other.
Okay, well, I think that's all we have time for today.
Yeah, I love the preppy look. Like, might as well have been wearing a polo shirt with a little alligator on it.
All right, now this has been Tunnel Talk. That feels good, girls. That feels really good. So we'll just keep that in our back pockets. But first, let's listen. It's not done yet.
Yeah.
Jeff Jarrett was scheduled to fight the wild card in round one of the Owen on Dynamite this week. This ended up being the second to last match of the night, and the wild card was Hangman. That was one of the top guesses, but you're always a little like, they could zag me. They might really want me to think that, and then they zagged me, but they didn't. They didn't zag. It was Hangman. He was really, really mad. He was in a really bad mood.
So mad, yeah.
Really upset. Do you guys want a quick talk about the presentation gear theme situation?
I will say that Hangman came out and he looked beautiful and he had new gear and I was really enjoying him. And our friend Susie said he was Guy Fieri coded, and then I couldn't see anything else. And so now every time I see Hangman, I say, welcome to Flavortown.
Welcome to Flavortown, baby.
It's so funny too, because I don't think she meant it as a burn, but it's like the most devastating burn. Like if someone had said that in a promo against him, it would have been like, wow, this feud is over.
It's so true. But then it's like you're always learning things about Guy Fieri, like about how he supported, you know, he gave thousands of dollars to people getting gay married in Florida, and he was,
I think he's
officiated his lesbian sister's wedding. I love Guy Fieri, and I think that Hangman should be proud to be associated.
It's also funny to think, like, presumably if anybody's gonna do a promo against him sometime in the near future, it's gonna be Danielson. And it's so funny to picture Danielson being like, welcome to Flavortown.
The way that I don't believe Danielson knows about Flavortown, I don't think he's ever even heard of Flavortown. So good luck with that, sir.
Danielson should be leaning into little bitchy passive-aggressive comments, though. Like, I think that would be a good character note for him, because that's his whole deal.
Why am I suddenly flashing back to one time that I think he did a promo that we did really like? And there was something about, like, we called him a goat herder, or he called someone a goat herder. Do you remember this?
Vaguely.
No. All right. Well, maybe I'll find it in our notes from years ago. If you guys remember any goat promos that Danielson has ever done, you just let us know about that. So if he was Guy Fieri coded. He had a new dark theme song. Yeah.
Which I was a little bit disappointed at first, because I was like, oh, I wanted to like really pop hearing those opening notes. But like, A, everybody popped anyway. And then I was like, oh, because he's super heel Hangman coming back. And they were working so hard to keep people from cheering him. So they were like, we've got to have like a dark theme song that you don't know. And that's not real. Like, it's a good theme song, but it's not like a big poppy one.
It's not really revving the crowd up. Right. I think that is fair to say that it's like kind of a...
It's a somber kind of darkish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then with Jeff Jarrett doing this really emotional promo ahead of time that everybody loved. And then Hangman beat the shit out of him. And it was pretty rough.
Well, I thought it was so effective because it hit and it was like slow and ominous, but he came out of the face hole. And so I was like, what are we doing here? And so then he came out. And I couldn't really get the lay of the land. I was like, what's going on with, like, his expression? He looks mad, but, like, focused. Like, what's happening? And then when he beat the shit out of Jeff Jarrett, I was like, oh, we've got heel Hangman. Fuck yeah.
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 So good. I like when I can see, like, how hard they're working to keep the crowd from cheering from him. And it worked. Like, but it's like, oh, like, good job, everybody. Because when you have a big return of a very popular wrestler, it's like.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy that they did it two segments in a row. Basically they were like, we have someone that we think people will want to cheer, and we've got to try and keep them from getting cheered. And I think that both MJF and Hangman managed to do that really effectively.
I think someone brought up that it was really good that, like, you know, people were turning on Hangman and booing him, but there wasn't a single CM Punk chant in Chicago. Uh-huh. But they did chant something that they knew would get under his skin, actually. Ooh. Which was,
and what was it?
Swerve's house.
Whose house?
It was Swerve's house.
Yes.
It is so horny for the audience too. After however many months of gap, 4 months it has been since Hangman's been gone, everyone's like, oh, you know what he's mad about still? Mm-hmm. Because we remember it vividly, because it was like one of the best stories of the past couple of years. It's like, oh yeah, Swerve's house is what we chant to.
I want to participate in the story, and I want to show my displeasure for Hangman, and I want to get under his skin as the crowd, as like the third participant in this match. And so I'm gonna chant the name of the person that makes him the craziest. It's like, ooh,
it's so sexy. But I think some of it also is probably like, yes, we'd love to see it again. Get back at, absolutely. Get right back at
I know.
It.
I know. I know. With him, the way he, like, when the crowd started chanting that and he just stood there and looked into the crowd and looked furious, I was like, please, run it back. I am at my leisure. Please. I know.
That's all I want to see.
Well, let's, why don't we talk about this first and then we'll circle back on the Elite stuff. So Hangman is now, he won his match against poor Jeff Jarrett, whose friendship with Owen Hart couldn't help him in the ring with Hangman.
And some old man podcasters were really mad about it. It's like, yeah, he's a heel. Like, do you guys not watch wrestling before? Like, you don't see what they're doing?
Dave said something I think that I didn't. Okay, Leah, you go.
I think there was a whole bunch of people that seemed to think that because Jeff Jarrett had given that promo, that means he was going to win the Owen, but they hadn't been saying that up until the moment that Hangman showed up. So it was clearly just something that they made up as a grievance because they couldn't think of anything better. But it was like one of those moments where I was like, you think that like they didn't set Jeff Jarrett up to be knocked down? Like that was the whole, you thought Jeff Jarrett was going to win the Owen and get the shot at Wembley? Did you? No, you didn't.
No one did.
And I think because it's like Memphis next for the next match, like they probably thought he was going to get through to there. But like, guys, like you can't see, like it's just such obvious, deliberate heel framing that it's like,
I thought it was very strange that as far as I understood it from, I don't know where either someone recounting from the Observer or a tweet or something, that Dave was like, this is a crazy booking decision because if you did all those promos, then that the only reason you would do that is because you would want them to be continuing in the tournament. And I was like, that's really strange to say, Dave, because the other reason that you would do all those promos is to make it more meaningful and more dastardly that this person has been defeated and not even respectfully. That
because it's just like, Jared, no, fuck off. If he hadn't done that promo, would anyone give a shit if Jeff Jarrett got beat up? No, of course not. They'd be happy.
The point is to make you care and then be like, oh shit, Hangman doesn't give a shit. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
I'm starting to suspect that some of these wrestling podcasters don't appreciate stories.
it's an interesting point. Something interesting to say. Sure, these people don't want to roller skate with me. All right. Okay, but so now Hangman's in the Owen. He's going to fight Jay White, I think on Collision, seems right, maybe? Yeah, The winner of that match is going to fight Brian Danielson. Brian has already won his matches versus Shingo Takagi and Pac. And then the winner of the tournament overall will go on to fight Swerve at Wembley. So we have successfully, I think, peeled Ospreay out of the conversation. Not we, I mean, they had to do it. We've been saying the whole time we didn't do the conversation, but we've been working hard.
We have. We say it every week, and I know Tony Khan listens.
He listens and he says, I have to do better for them. Tony has successfully peeled Ospreay out of this conversation, which is great. That's really good. He's going to have really something good with MJF and or Danny Garcia. It's kind of unclear how that'll play out.
And it's going to be horny. It's telling a great story. Good job, guys. Yes.
Very good work. So now I think we mostly feel that it's down to Brian or Hangman. Yeah. I think everyone agrees that we're going to get through to that Hangman-Brian Danielson match. Mm-hmm. I think we can talk about what we think will happen or what we think we'd like to have happen. Be interesting. Okay. Start anywhere you want.
Okay. So I think that there's three potential scenarios. Okay.
Okay, Connie girl.
Okay. Let's talk sports. Let's talk scenarios. Guys, yeah.
Let's talk some game theory.
Okay. We got points on the board. Who can still win it? Okay, Leah.
Okay.
Take us there.
Hangman versus Swerve at Wembley. Mm-hmm. Rules. I'd be horny. Yep. Would love it.
No we'd doubt. All be horny.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd all be really fucking us, slimy.
Everyone in the crowd, everyone everywhere. Yeah.
Yes. Would be slimy.
Simply yes.
Okay. Then there's Brian, Swerve, and Hangman's given something else juicy to do. I don't care. That sounds nice. I think that'll be a good match. Brian will get his big fairy tale moment. I won't be like that mad about it.
A huge ball gown. He'll be dressed by mice and birds. He'll drive in a pumpkin to the castle.
That's exactly it. Swerve will give him the glass slipper. It'll be fine. It'll be good. If Hangman is given something juicy to do, I think the worst case scenario that everybody is really afraid of is that that it'll be Bryan Danielson, but Hangman won't be given something to do. But I just feel like that's probably the least likely scenario of the three, so I'm not that stressed out.
I have to say that my fear about that is actually zero. I actually don't. I actually am not at this point in the wrestling ecosystem. I'm not worried about it, literally at all.
Yeah,
so that's where I'm at.
I know. I'm honestly not that worried about much.
No, not really. Just judging from like what's been on screen, like I feel like there's been a lot of like dooming discourse type stuff, but it's like from what's on screen, I think it's not unlikely that Hangman and Swerve have the match at Wembley. And even if it is Danielson, like, I don't give a shit. And
I know. I mean, it'll be fine. As long as Hangman has something to do, then I don't care. Like, it'll be fine. Yeah. Like, it's just fine.
It's like, if Danielson goes and, like, wins the belt at Wembley, which is, like, whatever, like, I don't care. He's going to drop it right away anyway. He's, like, semi-retiring. Like, Swerve will get it back or someone else will get it. Like, Swerve's having a great reign. I don't think it'll be, like, too rushed. And I'm just not concerned about Hangman's storytelling because he's doing amazing. Like, the crowd is remembering everything with Swerve. Yeah. Like,
it's one of those things where it's, like, if it's bad, then I won't like it. But if it's good, I'll like it.
Right. And things have been pretty good in 2024, to be honest, storytelling-wise. I mean, obviously, always things can be better, but it's like nothing has been a catastrophe.
I will say, and I agree with all of that, because I'm cruising through summer, okay? I do have a strong preference for Hangman Swerve, and it's a very strong preference. Yeah. And
Danielson's not going to get us horny. I mean, maybe this will be the one time he decides to turn it on, but you know.
It won't be. It will not be because every day that man gets less interested in storytelling. He's like, remember, he's like, it's daddy's blow off year. This year, Papa does anything he wants. And what he wants to do is pretty straightforward matches. And he hates storytelling. He hates it. You can't make him do it.
Danielson, if you're listening, could you just get that energy from after your match with Eddie, where you actually real and vulnerable for 5 minutes and just bring some of that to any program?
She's like, what? I can't hear you. My head is ringing from getting hit too hard.
I'm having a seizure right now.
What do you think that he and Swerve could get up to? Like, what do you think, like, what could Swerve say about Bryan Danielson that would get Bryan Danielson so mad?
Nothing. No, that's not, I know that's bad. That's a bad attitude. You can't go into the test that way.
I'm just picturing Swerve, like, grabbing a mic and being like, eating meat carelessly is so fun.
I throw things away every day of my life. I buy things just to put them in the landfill.
I hope this planet burns.
I don't fucking know. But yeah, I mean, it's like, lovingly, I have, I would say, less than no interest in seeing Danielson versus Swerve. And I know that, and it's okay. It's okay for people to
it's
want
like
it, but
the match itself will be fine. Good,
of course.
Probably,
of course,
but like,
the match itself
but
will
July
be good.
And August will be boring as hell.
If Swerve does a similar thing to like the Bucks did with Sting, where he's just like, I'm going to kill that old man. I'm going to retire him. I'm going to send him out and he's going to die. I want Swerve to grab a mic and be like, I'm going to send that man out on his back.
Danielson, of all people, he wants to go out on his back, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Go out on his back.
Bryan Danielson is backstage, like, panting like a little dog. Please. And then they take me out on a stretcher and nobody hears from me for 6 months.
He throws his phone in a bonfire and it's never heard from again. You have to be on Be Real following his wife to get proof of life once in a while.
I'm literally imagining there is no proof of, like, he's going around to people backstage being like, and you'll call Dave and tell him that I'm dead, won't you?
I had a seizure in the hospital, and that was the end of that.
He has to, like, literally threaten Dax's life, and is like, you fucking blow this for me.
He could get away with it right now, because Dax is home with his hematoma.
Right. That's true.
This is That's the time so if you want to fake your own wrestling death.
We have a very brief hematoma window here. The time is now. Oh, my God. Okay, but then, so I was going to say then that... that Swerve and Hangman, I do feel like, because they fought a lot at the end of 2023, beginning of 2024, and in, you know, a vacuum, I probably would be like, yeah, you could hold off on their next meeting for a long time. That would be cool. Like, it would be fun to slow burn it. But as we approach the electric atmosphere of my stadium, and I think about what I want to see and feel in that space, it's kind of like, fuck it, we ball. Do we not ball? Fuck it. Just let us ball. Get the old man is out.
It would sell tickets. I swear, the line would go up. I feel this very passionately. And it's not just because it's what I want to see.
As someone who went to Harvard Business School, I know.
We've all known that about you.
The only way that they can run Wembley next year is
Mm-hmm,
Hangman and Swerve.
This is all that could save it.
Kissing in the middle of the goddamn afternoon.
Yeah.
And it's and what I'd love to see is some of that interview with the vampire.
Yes. A little lip bite, a little
like, see things
my
where I think
not
like
asleep.
Whoa.
I'm picturing,
did you learn that?
I'm picturing Hangman. Married? Like grabbing Swerve's shoulder and like banging him against a wall a couple times before it goes back to the kissing him. Please.
You know? Then maybe they push each other backstage and the camera kind of follows them as they get to a more private area.
And the camera stays on them.
Mm-hmm.
And the kissing continues.
And it's the all in 2023 footage kind of situation.
You just see Tony and Gorilla and like Hangman
and
Swerve
and Hook is
up
there.
Against a wall.
They're
trying to pull them off each other.
They're in such a frenzy to get somewhere private that they accidentally shove Tony into the mud.
Tony fears for his life.
The Bucks had to show us the footage. They had to.
Wow, and then suddenly their faces again. And they reveal the kissing footage.
And we say, why would you ever be team AEW?
And it's like Dax being like, I believe in kissing in the privacy of your own home with your wife. I believe in kissing my wife who I love.
You see, some of our friends were speculating, because I guess Hangman, like, wasn't wearing his wedding ring at a certain point, and there was that promo where, like, the house was all empty and stuff, and they were like, maybe he got kayfabe divorced, which would be over Swerve, which I'd be very interested in.
Oh, yeah, I guess I was just thinking, like, yeah, because his wife doesn't think it's safe to be married to a wrestler.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But I would also like if his wife was like, will you please stop talking about your coworker?
I think you're having an affair.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Okay. So, you know, make us happy.
Book it. Yeah.
I'm just book Swerve Hangman. Hey, don't. If I were you, and this is just between us, I would just book Swerve Hangman. I think that. Yeah. It's going to be really fun in the electric atmosphere of Wembley Stadium. And then, like, just building up the whole summer is going to be so, like, ooh, sexy, hot. Like, this, I'm sweating, wet, hot American summer. And then we head to the UK for kissing. So that's just what I see. And then, like, when I think about Danielson, I think, like, washed. Like, that old man.
Cooked. Line go down.
Go on his back.
Yeah, put him on a stretcher. Boo.
No sexy energy at all.
And I've heard that's what everybody is saying. So
if he kisses Mox, we can have a conversation. But
only if it's nasty. If it's one of those little kisses, then it's
not a forehead kiss.
No, although that would be sweet. Actually, I would really like that. Yeah. I'd like it if Danielson was bringing a little more of a forehead kiss energy to some of his relationships.
Nice, actually, yeah.
Leah, were you going to say something?
I don't think so. I don't
lost it.
Might have been about Wembley, Electric Wembley.
The electric. The
disgusting
electric
Danielson.
Wet Hot American Summer. Any of those things. Well, we've simply got, we can't move on because we actually do have to talk about this Bucks Hangman interaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. And more face behavior. We have to talk about it.
I know, we have to talk There's nothing we can skip, girls. I'm so scared.
Crocodile.
We're going 4 hours.
I don't know. This one's gonna be long. It won't be 4 hours, but we're not getting to an hour and a half. I'll say that. Maybe we will. Okay. So the other thing happening with Hangman is that he went backstage. The Bucks were there. They're characters. You've met them. They're like, wow, we did such a good job as EVPs. We brought you back. We dropped your suspension. We got you this fun slot. We do need a fifth for Blood and Guts, which is coming up just a couple weeks. So are you in? And Hangman, just looking so fucking pissed off, he grabs Matt Jackson by his shirt and he tugs him close and he says, I'm not your puppet anymore. I'm not a child. I'm not your young boy. I'm a grown man. I'm not the elite's man anymore. I do what I want and I will be winning the Owen for myself. And Matt Jackson with a little so excited, so scared on his face, I would say.
He looked like he was learning some things about himself in that moment. And speaking of shoving somebody against a wall, basically.
And we have this footage just for free, you know? Yeah. Posted on YouTube.com. Maybe.
Pulling that vest aside so we could see a little.
Yeah, let's talk about some stuff. First of all, Nick banana suit.
Yeah.
That was Big Bird. Insane.
Yeah. Big
choice.
Bird coated. Yeah.
Matt, the pearl necklaces, I would say, are like accumulating a new
They're
one
growing.
Every yeah. week.
I which... think last week they explicitly told me it was one pearl necklace, but actually it was three.
Yeah, I think he's just acquiring more and more and more, which I love. Yeah, Hangman is the only ally that we have in this company because he says, why are you wearing this? Why are you wearing vests? Why are you wearing jackets?
Maybe I would fight on your team if you weren't wearing these fucking clothes all over your bodies. Not an inch of you bare.
Leah wants to see this chest. And grabbed it, pulled
grabbed
it down.
It. And it was the most chest that I have seen in weeks. I'm like,
kind of, you know, I was kind of, I've demonstrated for the girls. Yeah
push up.
It's kind of like that. Like,
it looked good, I'll tell you that. Yeah, I was like, I've missed it.
It took me back to those Cracker Barrel t-shirt days.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. We tweeted about it. And I tweeted something you had said, Allie, which was finally some good fucking titty around here about Hangman. And our BFF Rich Latta said that makes it sound like there's bad titty. And I was like, there's not bad titty. Like, I've never seen a bad titty, of course. The only bad titty is the titty I don't get to see, which the Young Bucks are withholding.
Every week they provide us with the absence of titty. And it's so sick. It's what's keeping, it's the only thing keeping them heels, basically.
The only thing I keep thinking is that somebody was explaining to me, and I'm so sorry, I forget who was explaining to me the Okada thing where for a while, I guess he turned heel and he started wearing pants and everyone hated the pants and he just kept wearing them and being like, fuck you, I wear pants now. And like,
and he turned heel and started wearing pants is just like such a funny sentence and everyone hated it.
Good wrestling, baby.
I love wrestling.
And then one day he came down and he was walking down the ramp and he like was wearing his pants and then he pulled them off and he was wearing his like cool disco like trunks underneath and everyone lost their shit. I just
like
keep hoping.
Breakaway pants?
Yeah. I just keep hoping for that moment where one day the Bucks will be in the middle of the ring and I'll be like, those fucking vests again. And then he'll just be like, no.
Oh my God. Siri, play the Mountain Goats cover of One Fine Day for me, please. while I ruminate on that. I'd like that very much. I will say, alongside getting to see Matt Jackson looking like he'd used like boob tape to get him like that a little bit.
He really did. They were really like pouring out of the jacket.
So sexy.
And listen. The look on his face when Hangman had his face pressed up to Matt's and his fist in Matt's jacket. Matt's face was very much like, oh God, like I can't get a boner on TV. This is my place of work.
Which is especially funny when it was actually all equally crazy was Nick standing there not looking like he felt like taking any action about it. He's just like, oh, he's getting menaced. Well, it does happen sometimes.
Yeah. And then when Hangman knocked Matt away, then Nick said, what is his problem? Like, in his tone that was, like, not in line with what had just happened. It's like, your brother just had a very sexual experience right in front of you.
And, like, the outfit really added to it because at least, like, Matt looked, like, along the lines of how they've been looking normally. Yeah. But Nick was wearing sunglasses. The fucking insane, like, Miami Vice banana yellow suit, just looking supremely uninterested as Matt, like, has a brand new experience in his life. Like, it's crazy.
Nick's just like, I mean, that happens sometimes. Like, Nick, it doesn't. It's worth looking at.
I think Nick was like, you know what? Like, the Elite are not a normal faction. There are things that happen, and you just see, hey, when you make a faction with Kenny, you get used to sometimes things just happen.
Nick is like, this is how families behave. And Matt, for the first time, is being like, is this how families behave? All right. Okay. Well, we simply must move. Oh, no. No, we don't. We can't move on because what I was going to say. Just circle back over and over again. What I was trying to say in the first place was, yes, Matt Jackson, your titties were beautiful. Hangman, your titties were fucking beautiful, and you came back with your beautiful, big, juicy titties that you're always kind of pressing together, and you looked so fucking good, and I can't wait to see you every single week. Ugh. I respect you, and I'm attracted to you. That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I respect you as a performer, and I sexualize you as a woman.
Oh my goodness, you don't have to, we didn't have to get educated at all to say this stuff, you know.
No, that comes naturally. Yeah.
Comes naturally.
This comes out of our mouth for free.
Oh my God, let's fucking move on. Jack won the TNT title by anything to say. He did win it. He won it. Good.
Good for him. Good. Looks good with
it. I'm so fucking happy for him. We just don't have anything to say about it. And
we can't.
Some more women to sexualize.
Look, we got to get to other stuff. Well, it'll come up. Things will come up.
Good job,
when things
Jack.
Happen, yeah, things will come up.
Yeah. Well, can't wait to see what you do with it. I know you're going to be great. You were amazing. Love you. Moving on. Mina and Tony fought for Mariah's love. Pause. Let me repeat it. Mina and Tony fought for Mariah's love at Forbidden Door. Tony did a promo that I guess was like used like a Statue of Liberty poem as the I love it. And then
I love
it
because it's like she came out wearing the Statue of Liberty thing, and I was like, she's Australian.
She respects our
traditions. It's a melting pot. You don't think that she can bless America?
She said, it's almost July 4th, and I know all Americans will be going crazy for the Statue of Liberty.
Plus, the Statue of Liberty is literally French. So I think that this all makes perfect sense.
Case closed, Your Honor. Is
that what you were expecting us to do? Listen, I will defend to the death her right to be the Statue of Liberty. So she did come out dressed that way. She and Mina did really great wrestling. It was really fun to watch. I had a blast.
Oh, my God.
So really good match.
I don't know. I think you guys are going to agree with me. This is the match of the night. Like,
oh, yeah. For sure. 100%.
From bell to bell, this was the match of the night.
Yeah.
It was because of the combination of how much the story had been built up and that it was just a great match. It was like, wow, I can access every level of this, which is so fun to me. I get it. So Mariah was flitting around. She was wearing a little pink dress, and she had called herself on Twitter. She said, I'm the prize.
Oh, guys, I me. Loved that. The fact that she explicitly was like, they are fighting over me, and I am the prize. Ooh.
And I love for her to be saying it in the middle of commentary constantly being like, and her mommy, Tony. And I'm like, that's right. I know that's how you see this couple at the Pride Parade, but actually they're lovers.
It is so good for me that for 3 years we've been using the phrase father lover, which nobody has liked.
And no then one likes.
And then
it's
AEW's
never brought up as one of our accomplishments.
No, the IWC hasn't really onboarded that one. Like yeah. Some other things we said lately they have, but father lover has not really yeah. escaped.
No, no, people are not like, and you know, classic tunnel dog. But this time, for them to be like, no, this is a classic mother lover situation.
Mother lover.
For Tony to constantly be saying, this is my daughter, I am her mother, and then explicitly do a thing where, like, Mariah's grabbing her ass and, like, taking her away for a threesome. I'm like, yeah, mother lover.
Mother yeah. lover. And to be
Sting
super...
and Darby never went this far with it, and no. it is a fault.
It is a fault. If we had to say there was one fault to the Sting-Darby relationship.
Not enough ass grabbing. We all thought it.
I've never seen Darby grab Sting's ass, and that he should be held to account for that.
Bring him back before the court. He must stand before the court and answer for his crimes. Failure to grab ass. I want to be super clear with listeners. If you haven't encountered our usage of father lover, this isn't like, it's not like the SNL song Mother Lover, where they are the mother lovers because they love the mothers. Like the mother herself is the mother lover. It's about that uncertain, like, what is this figure in this person's life? Yeah. Is it a mother? Is it a lover? In the case of Mariah and Tony, they said, wouldn't you like to know? And I said, I do know. Lovers, but it's mother lovers. And that's so important. It's an important age gap romance where I think you might be pretty much the same age.
I think probably. It's like everyone's acting like it's Holland Taylor and Sarah Paulson. And it's like, are these women like 27 and 29? Like, I don't know.
It's just clear that they're doing, like, there was some tweet that, who was it? Somebody was like, and I forget which couple it was, but it's like they're doing sex so complicated that you're not even really sure that it is sex. It's like they're hunting each other on a safari or something. It's like, yeah, that's what Tony and Mariah have going on. We're just sort Absolutely. Of like, what's going on is so strange that I don't even know if it's considered sex.
And they say, by the you way, don't need to know. It's not yeah. for you.
And they are 25 and 28, by the way. I just looked it
Perfect.
Up.
It's an right old that, like, crone and a sweet young thing.
The Holland Taylor Sarah Paulson metaphor is exactly right. That is exactly what I think about it, where I'm like, yeah, and it's so great that they found each other and they can still relate to each other across the divide.
Wonderful.
Oh my God. Well, we had a really good time during the match, and then Tony did win, and Mariah seemed kind of agonized about what the fuck am I supposed to do now? She hadn't figured out her plan of attack. And so she got in the ring and she managed to convince them to hug and respect each other in that way.
Yeah. They did the funniest thing where Mina was like held out a hand and Tony looked at Mariah in this way that was like, do I have to do this? And Mariah just looked at her and like nodded really quickly. Like, yeah. And then she did it. And then Mariah was like, and also a hug.
A little more.
And then it was like, oh God. And then once they hugged, Mariah was like, and do I dare to push the envelope a little further? Can we get in here? And this was the time that Mina was like, I don't know, I'm unsure, but nope. The three of them leaned in and kissed.
They kissed.
Tony and Mina were such brave girls. And they were scared to kiss each other. But then they said, Mariah really wants this to be a three-sided triangle. Okay? Yeah. So let's all get in there. Oh.
Loved it.
I'm so proud of her.
How many times over the last 3 years have we said matches should end in kissing?
Every week, I believe.
And no one
pretty much.
Ever listens to us
no
until now.
No one ever listens to us until now.
No.
Wow.
Incredible.
There has been a really resounding lack of support for some of our ideas in the past. But look, now you see it and you think, wow, you see it twice in one night. You mm-hmm. see more of a platonic kissy, but you also see a, you know, pretty charged sexual kissy, and you see why we call for it.
Yeah.
You see what it adds to the proceeding.
You see that it really puts a cherry on top there. And then Dave Meltzer tweeted, all you know story, people looking like fools right now, which somehow is the funniest thing I've ever read in my life.
And he's right.
He's right.
For once, the man is right. Y'all are looking like fools.
You are looking like absolute fools, especially after we get a backstage promo where the women are walking three across with Mariah happily in the middle, and they're saying
hands on each other.
What
asses,
kind of a what kind of a update can we get? And Tony turns around and says, I think we've said all we have to say. And then Mariah squeezes their butts to keep walking. Yes, yeah. You are looking like fools if you didn't enjoy it.
And I loved it because the vibe was very like, don't slow us down. We're on our way back to the hotel. We're going to do strange things to each other.
And will I say, I also am titillated by the fact that it's like, I think they'll enjoy their strange things, but also if Mariah and Mina then, like, in the middle of the night, stole all of Tony's jewels and ran away, I'd be like, that absolutely tracks. They got you, but what can you do
sometimes? Oh my God. I'm picturing that thing from Robin Hood where, do you remember that, the animated that where he kisses, yeah, he kisses a little
sucks
prince.
The gems out.
Prince John, sucks the. Yeah, that's exactly how Tony should get robbed. Where she's like, Mina, kiss my hand. And then Mina like.
Tony, book it. book the gemstone hand kissing scene, Tony.
Tony, line would go up.
Line would go up, Tony.
I just really need to see Mariah again. I mean, Mina. I really hope Mina comes back.
I know.
We need her so bad.
Love her.
I know. Hello, stardom.
Okay. Well, anything else to say about, God, we still have all this stuff
in
here.
We've got to move on.
We can't do it. Okay. Look, the women's Owen continues. So that's all you need to know.
Yeah.
Can I talk about OC?
Oh, yeah. Please. We have to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Orange Cassidy and Zack Sabre Jr. fought at Forbidden Door, and Zack won, and it was so sexy. Or in the words of Manolo, it was a, quote, nifty little match. I would say that's a slightly different response than we had to it. But he is, Orange Cassidy is our special little guy, so, you decide who you agree with.
He is. But Orange Cassidy came sexually alive for the first time on screen in this feud. Yes. I mean, the promos they were giving on Collision beforehand, where Orange Cassidy grabbed, it was a real hangman, Matt Jackson, grabbed in the front of Zack Sabre Jr.'s shirt and pulled him in. It's like,
completely unprompted by us. I saw multiple people in our Discord being like, so is this gonna end in kissing too? Or
that was certainly the impression they were giving. Yeah. I mean, they were really awake to the reality of each other's bodies.
Oh yeah. They even all of the lead up was very like Zack Sabre Jr. kept being like, I've wanted to get my hands on you for a long time and it's finally
darling.
Here. It's like, yeah. Oh, and okay.
And then he did get in the scrum and literally just reiterated it. It was just that way before. It was like, I've wanted to get my hands on you for years, darling. Derogatory. And at the scrum, he was like, I've wanted to get my hands on him for years. Complimentary. I've been watching him since he was knee high to a grasshopper. I've known about this indie artist for 10 years. And some of you don't even understand.
I mean, like, of course there was no challenge to wrestling him because he's an amazing wrestler and we know each other so well. It was just like,
all right,
wow, you can make out with him backstage too, as well as in front of everyone at the scrum.
Yeah, if you want
I'll say that I haven't always enjoyed Zack Sabre Jr.'s matches because sometimes I think they can be a little slow for me. Mm. But I would say that in this match, what he was doing was putting OC into Kama Sutra poses and then holding him there. And I said, you can feel free to come back, sir.
We can just run this match back every week if you want.
Yeah, let's make this a trilogy, shouldn't we?
It was such a good combination of the Kama Sutra poses and then OC being like, I'm doing a little bit of comedy and it's going to be some high action comedy. And they really were doing some like kind of flipping each other in certain ways where it was like, wow, where does one body end and the other begin?
These sort of lean blonde, one's a foot taller than the other, but otherwise little match pair.
Whew. You just can barely tell. And I really, if it's not clear, I really enjoyed myself and I just really felt horny.
Yeah. One of my highlights of the evening. This was not an unmemorable match for me.
The writhing bodies did arrive. Mm-hmm. And I like
and lo, they arrived.
Yeah.
And the girls were happy.
And OC looks so bummed afterwards. And in the Collision promo where he grabbed Zack Sabre Jr., he also was telling, I can't remember if it was Renee or Lexi, but he was like, my life is falling apart. I have nobody. I have nothing. It was just like, OC, like, ooh.
Yeah.
Where's this headed, buddy? Because yeah. that's the only non-horny thing that I have to say about this is just like, okay, what's next for Little Orange Cassidy?
I know.
He's slow burning this kind of like, I'm having an extreme mental decline and I'm going back and forth between my Jekyll and Hyde personas being pretty normal and then being really unhappy again. I'm interested in what is, you know, what it's leading to because he's got to have some kind of match at Wembley. So...
Yeah, you'd think.
I certainly would. I would be so surprised if he did
better.
I would be really shocked if Tony said, I think I'm going to leave my specialist boy, my comfort goat, off the Wembley card.
He loves to fly Orange Cassidy to London, so surely.
Did you guys see that picture of him on the beach?
Mm-hmm.
His little shorts and his little tiny legs.
I love... that he's even allergic to color in his bathing suit. He's like, no, I will just wear black shorts. I will never wear even a navy blue out of reach.
It was so fun to see his little shins.
I know.
Had hairy legs. Doesn't want to shave them under the denim.
No, he says, that's why I wear my long johns, my long pants. Okay, anything else about OC?
I hope we get something juicy. I hope they do something with Trent and Chris and get that moving along.
And I hope he does X-rated on-screen kissing. Yep. And then the only other thing we'll just really quickly mention is that Mox did lose his title. And I don't think we have anything to say about the match or maybe about any of it. I just feel like we must acknowledge it. You know,
we acknowledge it happened. And I say this to Mox. Now is a fresh start. You finished what you were doing. Now you're coming back home. Now you get into a new feud. You find, you listen to Swerve. You say, hey, I've lost track of this, but hey, what am I afraid of? What do I want? Uh-huh. And then you kiss somebody about it.
I am obsessed with your energy of it's like, you are Mox's disapproving father. You didn't have to send, you had to send him to military school.
You had went no choice. To Europe for the summer, but now you're back in the family business. I expect you to buckle down.
Yeah. That, I feel like it's like a little bit of Rumspringa. Like I'm Amish father. And yeah, he took his time. He went, he sowed his wild oats. But yeah, no, the farm is here. The fields must be tilled.
Make your some furniture.
Home. Please. Make me some furniture. Sexy, emotionally rich furniture. Yeah.
Fertility is so vital to the farm economy.
That's what we always say,
Everyone literally. Does. I'm pretty sure that's like Ben Franklin or something.
Fertility is so vital to the farm. Yeah.
Fertility is so vital to the farming economy. Something we all agree with.
You can't say it's not true.
No, you can't at all.
There's new life everywhere on the farm.
Yeah, and if you don't do some sort of ritual to increase the fertility, the farm will fail. So,
the
like,
farm will fail.
Get out
and
there
Max, do you want our farm to fail? No.
No, please, no. We need it to succeed.
We need that line to go up, Moxley.
We need more grain. We need more corn. We need more tomatoes. We need more zucchini.
Some juicy tomatoes.
We need
those summer tomatoes.
Little eggplant, maybe? Little aubergine.
Or a little aubergine. You think? Maybe a couple of aubergines. So get on that, Mox. And I think that's all we got for you tonight. Is that it?
Let's do enough of that, probably.
That'll do it.
Okay. Well, this whole time, I've been Allie.
I've been Ann.
And I've been Leah.
It is Tunnel Talk. Our theme is by Chris Corkin. Go check out his band Diaries' new single. Mm-hmm. What is it called?
Sundays.
Sunday Shadow. Sunday Shadow. on Spotify, wherever you get your music. What else do I say? I've got the text. I've got it here. Okay. Our theme is by Chris Corkin, the whole thing I just said. You can find us on Twitter and Tumblr at Tunnel Talk Pod, via email, tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. You can find us on our podcast feed. You can find us on the Social Suplex Network podcast feed. We highly recommend that because you can check out all the other great podcasts on our network. We had an awesome ONR KISS crossover this week to respond to Forbidden Door.
It was really good. I very much enjoyed hearing all of Jeremy's point of view, and I also enjoyed all three of them cackling just thinking about what we were going to say about the Tony Mariah Mina situation, and I hope that we said things that satisfied that.
I like that there's certain kinds of things that they see and they're like, well, let's kick it to the freaks.
They just said they're not meeting the allegations, so let's go over there. Go check out all our great brother and sister podcasts on the Social Suplex Network feed. You can also join us on the Social Suplex Network Discord. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. My God, stay frosty. And please, please, come back next week.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.